give you another 60 seconds on the quiz. This is really a little bit of a review if you did your lesson. We're not going to spend time on it. We'll cover some. For the recording, we're taking a quiz. Question one, list at least five things that Christians in the world did collectively as a local church in the New Testament with references. That's question one. Question two is two decisions and actions by elders in the New Testament with references. Question three, a list of three of the exemplary tasks that Paul did while he was at Ephesus, which he describes in Acts 20. Those are the questions. Okay? I have a lot of stuff, and it's mostly lecture tonight, so I'm kind of impatient. It's preparing for Sunday to be a pretty intense, I hope, an intense exercise. But it'll help to kind of get through this material. I hope you all see a little bit of a rhythm in the way we do these lessons. We really do want to begin with Bible teaching. You know what I mean? So we'll look at a bunch of Bible texts, a bunch of Bible examples. And then from there, we kind of say, okay, what do we learn? How do we generalize that into principles? And then from that, we have opportunities to make judgments, kind of the way we've done it. I hope that we can follow that wisdom. I mean, that rhythm. I think that's not a bad rhythm for elders to follow. If a problem arises or some kind of situation, think about what Bible text might apply. Think about options, right? Think about the principles that you could apply in various options. And then the judgment comes in, right? Instead of starting with judgment, well, I don't think this will work. I don't think this is great. Start with the Bible and then go from there. All right, give me some things that Christians did as a local church in the New Testament. And we'll skip the references for now. Just shout them out.
Broke bread together.
All right. Is that Lord's Supper or meals?
Meals.
Oh, okay, yeah. The whole church?
Well, I don't know. Some of the church.
Yeah, all right. Did as a local church.
Okay.
So I'm tricky.
Okay, yeah. Right. It wasn't.
Okay, do you think they fasted as a local church? I think Acts 13 is where I would look for that, yeah. They prayed and fasted. I assume they all did it. Probably not all in the same room. Actually, fasting, you don't have to be in the same place. It's something you don't do, not something you do. That's an odd one. Yeah. But they prayed, and that was in preparation for the appointing of Paul and Barnabas. Yeah. All right. Others?
Send aid.
Okay. Together, they put the pull their mind together. We read a lot about that, about them doing it and maybe them not doing it when they promised they would and things like that and how it would be handled. Others? Good.
Teaching.
Okay, there was teaching.
Fellowship of one another.
Okay, that's Acts 2. Right. So, I don't know if anybody fell in this trap, but when you see five things that Christians did, what's your first thought? Yeah, five guys are worship, right? And so, some of those, right? Singing and praying and teaching and Lord's Supper. Come on in.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah, but it turns out there's lots of other things. We'll look at those. In fact, we'll look at the others, the rest of the class period on that. So you can fill in your quiz if you want, or fill in the lesson, because these are right off the questions in lesson two. This is the assignment. It's on the bottom of that quiz sheet for next time. I hope you read the case, the church building case. And I want to assure you on this case, and I'm going to say it again Sunday if I remember, that case was written back in 2008, right, Russ? Or
we carried it all over the place.
So any resemblance to situations, past or present, are purely coincidental. Okay? So, anyway, I hope you've read that case and kind of get a sense of that. And I ask you to just, you know, do the first thing. Probably you should think about Bible text that may apply, but then go through the options, right? To do it, don't do it. Have the preacher preach on it. What, you know, all those good things that elders can do, I guess. And then think about the questions in G2. And that's a little different. That's a little more analysis on that same case. That's on page 13. And then on page 14, there are other hard questions. And these are things that in either preparing the material or serving or watching people serve or just worrying, these are things that have occurred to Russ and me, that they're hard. They're just hard questions. And of course, it almost always the answer is it depends. But that's the rest of the thing. Depends on what? All right, what are the factors? What do you think about? And pick one of those. Okay? Try not to pick the easiest one. I don't know what you think the easiest one is, but and spend some analysis. You need less to see. I have one extra here. And by the way, I went to the trouble in honor of my dad, three-hole punch every single one. And there are notebooks up here if you want to do that or supply your own to keep all the material together, including the quizzes and the other handouts and things. And I think we'll have some more handouts the next lessons, of course, but also maybe some additional things to stick in loosely. All right, so pick one of those questions and think of response, bulleted response. And every bullet could end with a question mark. That'd be fine. But think through at a little lower level of detail what else do you want to know, what matters, what circumstances might influence the decision one or the other, and that kind of thing. All right, back to Clearis. Can we finally leave her behind? Probably not. But I just wanted to summarize before we dive into lesson two. Here's what I think the takeaways are from looking at that case. And I think it's significant. And I think you've got to look at this really hard if you're thinking about serving as an elder and think about your status before God and your own conscience and your own love of brethren and those kind of things. Here are some things to think about. First, the weakest members are the greatest concern and source of anxiety. Is that a big surprise? No. And that's where your time will be spent. It's where your effort, your pain, your disappointment, your frustration, and all of that. There have to be preemptive relationships built with all members. Do you understand that? And here you can see which ones are the ones you want to primarily have the preemptive relationships with. Put those two bullets together. Probably the ones you don't know are the weakest, or might be the weakest, but you don't know. But, you know, you got to figure that out. And that's not in our nature, unfortunately. But I think of a shepherd. Who is he worried about the most in the flock? He's probably that sheep that's limping around all the time or gets lost or appears to be losing its eyesight or something wrong with it. And here's the rest of the story that makes it so much fun. Okay? Inevitably, from those who require the most effort, the weakest, and you can think of Clearis as an example of that if you want. Guess what? They will have the least sense of scope of the priorities of what you're trying to do. Is that true? You agree with that? By the way, it's because they're babies. And they want to grow up. Right? That's why. It's not to say that they're, you know, what's the word in Calvinism? Totally depraved or something. You know, but they have to be. They probably will have the least consideration for your inconvenience. They'll probably have the least gratitude, you know, if you make some sacrifices to try to get hold of them and worry about them and that kind of thing. They'll probably have the most questions or maybe the most likely to question your motives and wisdom. And that's probably because they're immaturity and they don't know you, perhaps. And they'll also be the hardest to find and to get hold of and meet with and keep track of and that kind of thing. Now, I know this is unfair generalization, but don't you agree that's kind of... When you think of a weak Christian, what do you think of? Well, maybe it's someone who can't overcome certain temptations, but generally it's somebody who's just fading away, drifting away. That's the way Hebrews describes it. We're not of those who shrink back to perdition, he says. And so, anyway, and then here's a punchline. Potentially destructive problems within an individual, which we hate, it frustrates us and all of that, rather than being in the way of the work, guess what? They are the work. It's not getting them in line so we can produce some product or grow the membership or have peace in the church. Maybe that's a good thing that comes with it, but that's not the work. That's not the heart of the work. And so, you might look for immaturity, worldliness, ignorance, lack of growth. These are fertile fields for doing the work of a shepherd. You might watch where is there strife, carnality, murmuring. Your first reaction is they're hurting the work. We need to get rid of them. But no, maybe another first reaction, a better one would be, hey, there's evidence of weakness in that Christian and they need some particular attention. Maybe that's the way to think about it. And of course, sin and its consequences are the work itself. Are you all okay with all that? Yeah.
I have a question. Jason. So your comment about like, oh, our first instinct might be like just get rid of them because they're disrupting things and they're disrupting what we're trying to do, the growth we're trying to have, or whatever.
Using up all my time.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm sure that there's a sense in which doing this work, as you've defined it here, and accomplishing that, then goes in towards accomplishing the other goals that you think that they're getting in the way of. Right?
Yep.
So how does that? How do you find that that works?
That's a great question. Lesson two begins with a discussion of what's the relationship between a sheep shepherd and a flock shepherd in mind. And can you, y'all kind of think through what he's asked about? Is fixing the weak people to make them strong, is that going to help the sheep shepherd?
The overall flock, yeah.
You think it might?
Yeah, I think it would.
Right? Turn that around another. Suppose I get the sheep shepherding down pretty good, and you know, great unity and kind of a feeling of success and excitement and all that. At the flock shepherding. That's it. What if I get that right? Is that going to help some of the weak sheep as well? Yeah, well, think of the inverse question. What if I make, you know, the group is flying apart at the seams through division and strife and jealousy? What's that going to do to the weak Christian? You see how that works the other way, too. So, you know, I hope it's clear that that's not all elders do, and they're too interrelated, and the success in one, you hope, you seem like would naturally build to the other. All right, so here's the kind of the how could the situation have been prevented? And I think we ended the class period by saying, you know, maybe the elders made a mistake at some time over the past year since she's been here. You didn't even get to know her, right? And all they've had is probably kind of a tense conversation about supporting her with a bill that she's fallen behind on. No indication to figure out why that's happening, what's that doing to her spiritual life. But look at the hard cases here. And here's my point. And maybe I'll illustrate with an example or two. These would be on page 9. And there's two D's in this, so the letter probably says G, but it should be I or something. I'm just word helping me out in the auto numbering. I said, well, look at some of these, right? A question 4. A peripherally involved family, seemingly perfect by external appearance, in whom you see implicit signs of worldliness following the trends and activities of society. Right? Look at Adam. Pick another one. 6. A semi-new convert whose background in the world is long and deep, who's struggling with many bad habits, like informal dress, language, mannerisms, smoking, rough personality, blah, 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 which repel. I mean, you can read any of these. You see, these deserve attention. Maybe more than someone you think of as doing pretty well, as strong and all. Do you think that? Yeah. But think about this. Fast forward a year and look at this family in question 4. Is it likely that this is going to show up in a case like this and you'll say, how did we get here? You know what I mean? Y'all see the point I'm making? And this is preventive action here. Is it better to do it sooner or later? You know, it's kind of the point I'm making. And you see in the Claro's case, we had a year. We knew a little bit about her background, not much. Right? And we saw a little bit of more hints, and what did we do as elders? Right? Same thing with this family. There are signs of worldliness. Is that going to explode one day with the kids doing something wrong or the family itself going off in a different doctrine because they're kind of impressed with a large church nearby? I'm making all this up, but it happens. It happens. And sooner is better than later. Okay, now I feel like I'm yelling at you. Y'all agree with what I'm saying here? Can we learn that from the case? It's just so much fun to do with this. But, you know, that's the heart of work. And Russ is going to explain how it's really lots of fun when he gets to his lesson. And he says, I know it sounds hard, but, you know, it's really lots of fun. He'll tell you that. He'll explain that. All right. Okay, lesson 2. I get on into this, but now we're moving into a more specific lesson on flock shepherding. And although we've covered, you know, a good bit of the details, I want to dive into some Bible text tonight. And then a little bit on the case study if we get to it. And then Sunday we'll really we'll work hard on this case, I hope, as miniature elderships on Sunday. Okay, here are my objectives. List five things local churches did, not including the acts of worship that are listed in the New Testament. You should be able to list three occasions where elders made a decision or took actions. We've already covered some of those in earlier lists. Explain the relationship between the flock unity of Ephesians 4 and the benefit of the sheep. That's key. Okay. Remember, if I made you list all those passages, Hebrews 13, 1 Peter 5, 1 Thessalonians, 1 Timothy 5, but Acts 20 and Ephesians 4 were two big ones. We haven't studied those yet, so we're going to look at those tonight. Five exemplary tasks of the Apostle Paul at Ephesus, and that's from Acts 20. And then, explain how it is, I want you to be able to explain how it is, when Christians act appropriately, that the local church solves the root problem that the modern diversity inclusion initiative attempts to address. Right? I think this is relevant. We need to just say it out loud, talk about it for a few minutes. Because I think in the church, probably by the time y'all are serving as elders, there'll be additional pressure, you know, to have diversity represented in leadership. There already is. There's already a great deal of criticism, and has been really for a few years, about the lack of diversity in the leadership of the church. Right? Yeah. Y'all have any black elders yet? Those are the kind of questions you hear. You know, things like that, or why are the women not represented in leadership? And anyway, you're going to hear that a lot via large attack. So we'll talk about that tonight. Boy, can we get through all that? Here are some things. I can go faster than this because you guys can look up these verses as easily as I can. I think they're there. Here are some things. They did the five acts of worship. They also met in Acts 6. That's apostle-led, but remember, we see that as a prototypical action of elders, really, in a way. And there was a problem, and they met together, and I think in a public way, the apostles presented and maybe got feedback, because it says the saying pleased the multitude, right? On a problem that they had. Y'all remember that problem as the Grecian widows? They selected workers on that occasion. I believe the congregation selected them. That's what the apostles told them to do. And the apostles appointed the men over the matter, delegating, I think, some authority for the work. They publicly condemned an unrepentant brother that take it to the church. I think Jesus, foreseeing the formation of the church, talks about discipline in Matthew 18. Initiate and explain discipline. Remember, Paul says, the whole church gathered together in my spirit with you, 1 Corinthians 5. So they're all, this is just things they did when they were all in the same room. Well, or under the same tree, or in the same upper room, or wherever they were. Anyway, that's reprove elders in the sight of all, 1 Timothy 5, the sin. That's important, so that everyone would be in fear. They discussed issues, doctrinal issues, in Acts 15. In that case, they'd heard from the apostles of the inspired truth. And then they decided, and I think this was the matter of judgment there, to write a letter to explain the truth to the church in Antioch, and selected men to carry the letter. But anyway, they welcome visitors. James indicates when a man comes into your synagogue, is the Greek word there, your meeting place, and he's not dressed well, or he's dressed real well, and you treat those two men differently, then you show respect to persons, and you're guilty of the whole law. 1 Corinthians 14 says if a man comes into your assembly, and he sees you acting crazy, not, you know, the spirits are subject to the prophets, and you're not controlling yourself or acting like you can't control yourself or whatever. The unbeliever, I think he says the ignorant and unbelieving or something like that, American Standard, will perceive that God is the God of confusion, not the God of order. But if he sees reverent people, he'll fall down and confess that God is among you. So that's a way we're actually teaching as a group in an assembled setting. People who wander in, I shouldn't say that way, but, you know, people who don't understand what's going on and observe our behavior. They announced the decision and gave some feedback in Acts 15. They selected and appointed workers to go everywhere. Everybody was together. That's the example Ryan brought up of the prayer and fasting. Boy, it seemed like they just put a lot of thought and effort into that, right, if they were fasting about that. And then after that trip was over, I don't know if he called it his first missionary journey or not, but when he was done, what did they do? The same group, really. Same place. They all gathered together again and heard the report of how it went. Is there New Testament authority for having a, was it Sunday night coming up, sermon or service about discussing men whom we support in evangelism and what they do. There's as much for this as there is for this. You know, but somehow we see those as maybe, okay, I'm not going to get off into sermons here. Okay, so here's some more things. Now, I don't know that they had to do this in a room all together under the same tree or whatever, but there was a decision made. I think the apostles led in that to let Saul join the church in Jerusalem. They made a commitment in some place, somehow, I believe, to the apostle Paul and maybe to the Judean needy people, needy Christians. Because Paul said, you made a commitment, and you better work hard so that we're not both embarrassed when you don't meet that commitment. Remember that? Was that a congregational action, to make a commitment together? I think so. I mean, we've done similar here. We've said, look, we're going to commit to try to raise some money for particular purposes. Paul said, not only that, in his letter to the Corinthians, he said, I'm not taking the money. You pick who you want to. I'm not going to be carrying that. We, you know, take care and do all things. What does he say? Something about everything's got to look open and above board, but that's not the verse. What does he say? I can't remember. Anyway, keep on going. If I can get on the screen. Selected men to carry the letter. Supporting and recruiting. The implication in 1 Corinthians 16 is that the church had asked Paul to talk to Apollos about coming to preach there, and he couldn't. But anyway, that they were trying to do that. I think that's a fair thing. Settling disputes between members. That's looking out for wise men among you so that you don't have these men arguing over maybe some kind of a business dispute. But here in Philippians 4, he writes to the church of Philippi, says, you guys help these women get along. Help them. And I think he's giving that instruction to the whole church. So, there was decision-making being done, and we saw the precedent in the book of Acts. Okay, y'all good with that? My only point is the church as a group does lots of stuff. And there's leadership and judgment and collective, what's it called, delegation of authority in doing those things. Okay, it's kind of hot. Talk to me. Argue. Give me more examples that I forgot. Okay, I'm almost going to call somebody. Ryan, what does that look mean?
Just wait and let somebody else to say something.
Do you have anything there about widows?
Good point. The widows seem to be enrolled by the whole church, didn't they? Yeah, 1 Timothy 5. And in fact, if you take the command literally and say it's not just to Timothy, but to Timothy teaching the church, he also says refuse some of them, too. That'd be two different things, right? Evaluate the qualifications of someone for the support, give them support if they need it, and then maybe refuse some. Yeah. Good. That's great. I'll have to add that to the list. All right. We're making time here, but that's not my goal. It's not just to make time, but just to say, when you think about the collective church, again, I asked you earlier, when you picture an elder, where is he and what's he doing? And if all you can think of is he's making the closeout announcements at the end of service, that's not the heart, nor the heart of what he does. It isn't. Right? At the same time, this isn't the five acts of worship. It's not necessarily the heart and heart of what we do as a church either. Look at all the things that were being done in evangelism and benevolence and in discipline and other things like that. That's what, if you think about what does an elder do as a flock shepherd, that's the work that he's doing. Seems to me maybe I'll go to that list as an elder and say, okay, we're doing our best at that and that and that and that, and think about how that collective work can be done. Here's some specific decisions and actions we know about in Acts that says elders did, right? Acts 11, the first time they appear in the New Testament record as church elders, at least. They met in Acts 15, they showed up there to consider doctrinal questions. They chose men. And by the way, I think there's a precedent here. If there's a particular doctrinal issue that's really, threatening the church or challenging the church or troubling the church, I believe the elders should be taking the leadership in sorting that out. Now, they may have to bring somebody in, like the apostles, to help with that discussion. But I believe that's a key thing in keeping with Acts 20, where he says, take heed yourselves and the flock, where he talks about the doctrines that might come in and influence people.
How much of the third point there, chosen men to send to another church, do you think was because of the early church getting established versus now? Should we be sending men to another church to help with issues?
Yeah, and I've had in the past pushback on both these two bullets, because it almost implies that the elders were determining the truth and distributing the truth to other churches, and all that, gets us all worried about the issues and that kind of thing, about church autonomy and all those kind of things. No, I don't mean it that way. But what I do mean is that somebody there in that church in Jerusalem really needed to be selected to do this evangelism. I think of it as evangelism. They were spreading the good news about the Gentiles don't need to be circumcised or whatever, as Peter says, that we shall be saved in like manner as they. So go spread that news. Well, somebody here is really qualified to do that. Would you go? We'll actually pay your trip if you go. You know what I mean? And so that's what I mean by that.
Okay.
But is that a collective work of the church? To support a man to go teach somewhere where there's clearly some need for doctrinal teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I remember having a long discussion with Farrell Jenkins way back, it was a long time ago, but about, because somebody had brought that up, I discussed it with some folks about the limits of what a local church can do with regard to other churches. And they said, well, see, they sent something of value. You know those parchments that the letter was written on? It was worth a lot of money. And they sent, one church sent that thing of value to another church. That was kind of the argument. I don't know. You can go with that as far as you want to, but what the point seems to be in the text is what they were sending was delivered truth. And I'll send Bibles anywhere. You know what I mean? As a work of the church. I'll send it to you, even if it's an expensive Bible. That's a different thing. I'm sending truth in its final form, so to speak, as opposed to just sending money to somebody. You just do the best you can with it, for some other work that I've got to have done myself.
Sorry to keep harping on that. I thought there was a good example years back, a church not too far north of us had lost their preacher or whatever and reached out, hey, can y'all help for a period of time? And I got an email from Sewell, hey, you're up that direction. Would you like to go up there for some period of time? And that seems to be a chosen man to send you another church.
Right. Okay, all right, then. I think there's not too many on this chart. They met to discuss their work, in Acts 20 elders did, with Paul. He called them together. I believe they took some preemptive action here where James and the elders met the Apostle Paul coming in. And there's something going on in 1 Timothy 4 where Timothy was given, neglect not the gift that was given to you by the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. That's another word for old folks, or elders, is what that really is, elders. So whatever that was, I think it was probably an opportunity or an office or something that he would have had to fulfill. So there's that example. So probably some others you can think of too. And then, of course, the James 5, pray toward anointing the sick. So why is it good to have overseers? I don't think we need to go over this. This is kind of human wisdom, right? One is, who's going to make the decision if you don't have already in advance somebody kind of who's in charge for making the decision, right? Nobody's in charge. Sorry, everybody's in charge. Means nobody's in charge. You've probably seen churches where that's a struggle to get it done. And also, you make maybe decisions before they're critical, right? Take the initiative. Jump on this problem. Anticipate the problem. And then there's other things, too. Of course, the main thing is the judgment, which you would hope elders were the best at. Because they're older. They're wiser. Look at those qualifications. They're men who have lived a long time, addressed evil. So, questions like, are all things helpful or edifying, right? 1 Corinthians 6. Some things are okay to do, but they're not the best thing to do. They don't edify. In 10:23, 1 Timothy 5, if a believing man or woman has widows, let them release them, let not the church be burdened. So there's some benevolence cases where, we'd all feel better and maybe get this problem off our plate if we just supported the person, but really maybe in this situation there's a spiritually beneficial answer. That happens quite a bit. But that judgment would need to be exercised, right? And then, was it Roger that mentioned this? Oh no, sorry. It was a recorded sermon I was listening to. Y'all didn't hear this. But somebody else recently made a point to say, you know, that the apostles basically said to the people, yeah, feeding widows, that's not our priority. Like it or not, it's not our priority. And we're going to make sure it gets done, but we're going to be spending time in the Word and prayer. Okay. I just put this in there. It's in your lesson sheet. I won't go over them. You see they're not even animated. But just recently, I decided to go through the Old Testament and look at places where God, mainly, either through Moses or through the prophets or through some particular circumstances, was kind of saying that elders, probably not quite the same as we look at them, were in charge. And by the way, I told you this before, elders in the New Testament, presbyteros, there is no feminine form of that word. There's a feminine form of presbytos, which is presbytos or something. That means old women, but not of the sense of being an elder as an office. If a man desires the office of a bishop, and that's a bishop word, but still, then that discussion is about elders. It's particular. And so here are examples, and they're interesting. They were not only making decisions for the group, but they often spoke for the group to another, like to the king somehow. Or saying, you know, we're on your side. We endorse you, David, as ruler, for example. They sat in the gates of the city and made, they were visible. They were there to settle problems. And I found this interesting. In Nehemiah 11:9, in the Septuagint, there were episcopuses, same word exactly, in the Septuagint, that we have for overseer in the New Testament. They had responsibility over different pieces of the construction of the law. Of the law. And that's a different word. These are all words that, verses that call out the elders in the nation of Israel and the kind of things they had to do. Including, this one, scary, guess who was called out by the prophets? Particularly for not listening to God's message and not leading the people to hear God's message. That's a kind of a scary thing. But anyway. All right, Ephesians 4. Here's the passage that mentions the gifts. I'm so sorry, it's kind of warm too. What can we do? Stand up? I don't know. I'm getting bored with my own self, and I'm up. All right. The gifts include apostles, prophets, which we don't have alive today, but we have the gifts that they gave us through the revealed word. Some gifts were evangelists, we have. Some pastors, which means shepherds, same word, and teachers. And some link these two because in the Greek there's a some and some and some. And here there's no some in front of this. So it could be shepherd teachers, which would be fine with me. That's a good description of what they do. Anyway, it's shepherds. For what? What do they do? Now look at the light blue. For the equipping of the saints, okay, they get tools. For the work, okay, but what's the work? What is the work? Well, it's building something, building the body of Christ. And notice that that phrase there appears at the end down here, growth of the body for the edifying of itself. You see, it begins and ends with a sense of a building. These gifts are given to try to build this structure up, right? In fact, there's the sense of the whole body, right, joined and knit together. Is that collective or individual in terms of a local church? Growth of the body, the whole body joined together, edifying of the body. What does that sound like?
Collective
does to me. A body, by the way, is composed of, we learn from other passages, right? Different members is the metaphor we use. Although we mix that when we say, what do we say? Placing membership. That, boy, that's an odd image you can just think about. Here comes my arm. Anyway, there it is. Anyway, so the light green or whatever color that is seems like it's aiming at a collective purpose for the elders, right? Is it the case that the elders are there to build up the body, to make sure there's a unity of the faith, that there's love, and every joint is doing its best to keep everything unified and all, and building it itself? Do you see that? Do you see a collective picture there of a healthy body with Christ as the head and the members themselves working together, loving each other, and the joints between each member are healthy and supplying the strength there. But look at the blue in the middle. Till we all come. Now we're starting to get a plural verb, I mean a plural pronoun there. Now, plural pronoun, we all come to the unit. Does that suggest some are not to that place yet? Some are not. Son of God to a perfect man, singular, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now, is he talking about the body, or is he talking about each of us trying to strive to that target of maturity? What do you think?
Oh, man. I put everybody in the coma tonight.
Well, let's keep reading. That we should be no longer children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men, the cunningness of craftiness by which they wait to lie and wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up into Him who is the head, even Christ. Does this sound like sheep or flock word?
Sounds like gross.
Did somebody say sheep? It does, because each of us are in a different place along there. We like to think that we're not all children tossed to and fro, right? Some are, some aren't. Those that aren't, they can help those that are to not be tempted, not be tossed, not and to be protected and help them grow up. You see that? And yet, the outer picture is of a body that's working together, but in the inner picture, and really, I think, the heart of the whole thing is that all of us want to grow to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So, let's diagram it this way. The every part kind of thing, every joint. And so, here's a kind of a picture. Gifts are given to equip for work. What is that work? It's building up the body. And that's described both before and after as unity. Unity. Knit together through that which every joint supplies. Built up in love. All attained to the unity. And by the way, that's our theme passage, right? And the chapter starts off with, you know, walking in unity kind of thing with the ones and all that. That's what chapter 4 is kind of about. But what does edifying of the body really mean? Well, it's building up this joints and every part, letting it share and all that. But really the purpose is all of us achieve to a measure of faith and knowledge as a perfect man. To the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, which includes two things. One is I'm protected so that I'm not swept away as a child is easily tossed to and fro with every wind of doctrine. But I'm also helped to grow. That I grow up. And so I'm protected from the bad stuff and I'm nourished into the good stuff. So I kind of draw it this way with the same colors. I think the gifts that God gave to the church, one was, man, keep the unity. So anything that threatens the unity of the body, you see it threatens this individual of growth here. Right? Now, on the other hand, the more we can build up this the outer body, or the body, this cocoon, this petri dish, this in love and strength, then the individual has a chance to be protected and to grow.
When I was reading the section about being protected, I didn't get the sense that there was a directive to protect weak people as much as there was to progress them. Like in the sense that progressing is what protects them ultimately.
Yeah, I agree with that. I had to stretch a little bit in this passage. Mm-hmm. But it does warn us that children are, not might be, but are tossed to and fro. So it's that's kind of their character. Right? They're gullible, they're vulnerable, that kind of thing. Now when we get to Acts 20, it's a different story. Paul is very explicit. Take heed to yourselves. And he says, from among your own number, men will arise teaching perverse things. I mean, okay, yeah, there's protection there. And he'll talk about that. And he talks about, wolves that ravage the flock. I mean, pretty protective sounding words. But I agree, it's a little bit of a stretch. But I think both of those are dangers. Do we want children in the church? Do we want immature people in the church? Jason says yes. Really? Well, guess what? When you baptize somebody, what are they? Mostly. They're immature. And we want that, don't we? We just don't want them to stay that way. So we want to be aware of that and protect them. And so and this looks like a family in a way. More kids is better. It's also more work, right? It's also more danger. It's also more opportunity for growth in the future. Yeah, Jason?
I have a question about that, I guess the second verse there where he talks about equipping. Says that he gave these, you know, offices for the equipping of the saints.
Yeah.
So for the work of ministry, it kind of makes it sound like, that, okay, it's not necessarily that it is the sole work of the elders to
good.
Do the
that's
ministry.
Very good. In
it
fact,
their job to
be more specifically,
the for the work.
That's
of
what
ministry.
They do. But who are their enablers and their coaches and their teachers and their supervisors in this work? Yeah, I think that's the idea. Yeah, that's a great point. The work is being done by the Christians.
Yeah.
the gift that they get to do the work, the toolbox, so to speak, it includes apostles, its prophets, the revelation. It includes overseers and examples in the case of elders and teachers like evangelists. You know.
And it makes it sound like, you know, so many of these things that are being accomplished are accomplished through the work of the ministry that the saints are doing, having been equipped by themselves.
Right. Exactly right. Which says this outer, you know, seemed to me the flock shepherding goal, right? Make this such a great place that this is going to naturally happen. And every joint where it's not here, but that which every joint supplies is there, and each part does it share, is another phrase out of there. Man, that's the bigger picture of a well-functioning collective body membership. Yeah, great. That's a really good way to look at it. So I think that's teaching on the elders' work, primarily to say what's the church doing? What is the work of the church? And I think we might think of this is the purpose, grow this, make it. But no, really, at the heart is we're all trying to grow up to the measure of the stature. Okay, here are some things that Paul said he did in Ephesus, right? And I put in blue here the things that actually are commands to the elders. I mean, no fuzz on it, right? When you get to verse 28, he says, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this, therefore take heed. And then I think he says it again, therefore, he says it again, I think a couple of verses later, verse 29. So the blue are commands that he gives, but everything he's doing there, he says, I've shown you by giving you an example, right? In fact, he says, remember, verse 31, I think is where he says, remember, I was there for 3 years, and therefore watch. No, he says, watch, comma, and remember that for 3 years I didn't cease to warn night and day. You see how he's mixing the command with his own personal example. So these are things that Paul did. He preached everything. Where did he preach? Publicly and house to house. And to the groups and to the individuals and to the families.
And he watched and warned with tears.
Day and night. Right. Yeah, with tears. So he worked the whole counsel of God, everything needful, I think he says. He himself worried about his own example and perhaps also his own weaknesses. He watched all the time. He learned about the flock. I added some of these words here, but take heed to the flock. Protect them from external threats, the wolves. Protect them from internal threats, that some of you guys that are going to go bad. Watch and warn night and day. And then he goes on to say, while I was there, and I think it's in the context of the example, I didn't take money. I supplied my own needs, and I even paid for some other people's needs while I was there. What an example, he said, of a worker. And then he said, I've shown you in every way, gave you this example, that you support the weak. And that is a command. I should have put that in blue. Why didn't I put that in blue? But anyway, you see, some of this is command, some of this is by example. So those are the exemplary tasks at Ephesus. Okay. No way I can start this. The bell about to ring. We'll start there next time. There's a section in the lesson on diversity inclusion. You can kind of look at that and think it through. But primarily, I want to make sure we look at this case about this attendance. I'm sorry, a church building problem, right? Outgrowing a church building. Great opportunity pops up, and it's a hard decision, but somebody's got to make the call, and so the elders make the call, and then it doesn't go over quite as well as we thought it would. So what are we going to do? Okay? I'm going to finish. I'm not trying to dive into anything else.
So one of the thoughts that you had about how to think through this class, so, I mean, if this case study, if we're facing decisions like that, they don't typically get done in 45 minutes. Start a class, and we realize our problem, start an elder meeting, 45 minutes later, we walk out with a solution.
What, that would be solved that
way? That'd be great. Usually, it's something like you're just constantly, all through the week, whenever it came up and realized you're at a crisis point, you got a big decision coming, whatever it is. You can't sleep about it. You're thinking about it. It's on your mind when you're driving to work and in the shower. And so part of the kind of exercise here is really spend some time between now and Sunday pondering.
Part of the point.
What do we do? I got to come in. I know I'm going to meet with the other elders on Sunday, and I need to have an opinion. I need to have a thought of what should be done.
A well-formed opinion.
With some scriptures, some principles.
So you that kind of, you know, you've been in high enough management that you kind of, your personal and your public life merge, and you're just thinking about the responsibilities you have all the time. I know some of you have been there, I know. You know how often it is that you're in the shower and, you know, some problem just kind of been stirring around back in there and you think, here's an idea. And it's a dumb idea, but you start, you know, shaping it and scraping it and turning it over, and it maybe gets better and better. So think about that. Read this case carefully and think about just what all can you deduce. And I'm sorry there's not more. Intentionally, there's not more information. You just have to deal with what there is. So. All right, thanks.